call our Planning and Development and Extension Education Committee meeting to order. First item of business, just certifying that we're in compliance with open meetings laws.
We are.
Okay, great, thank you. And then our next order of business, it's not on the agenda, but I think we should go around the room and just, you know, maybe briefly introduce ourselves. Director Payne, obviously you have your own director update at the end of this portion of our meeting, but let's just, you know, briefly go around the table and introduce ourselves. And why don't we start with you, Director?
Sure. Pamela Larson, and I'm the new Area Extension Director for Area 22. And I'll share more when
Sure. Oh, you're going to hold out on us.
I am. The anticipation.
Brian Bashaw, Supervisor District 19, as we talked, right here in my backyard.
Okay.
John Franco, Supervisor District 13.
Ed Kubicki, District 6.
Daniel Gashke, District 7, which is kind of the heart of the city of Kenosha.
I think we all know each other, but I'm here.
Carolyn. Mary, Health and Wellbeing.
Shelley Billingsley, Public Works and Planning and Development.
Atifa Robinson, Nutrition Administrator for the Food Wise Program for Racing in Kenosha County.
Okay, great. And just for attendance purposes, Supervisor Bashaw, Franco, Kubicki, and Gashke are here. Currently, Supervisors Berg is excused, and O'Day, I haven't heard, but I assume that O'Day is excused.
O'Day is excused, yes.
What's that? Okay,
excused.
Thank you. And then Chairman Carroll, thank you, I'm trying to blank. Chairman Carroll is on his way. It looks like we do not have our youth and governance here currently.
Yeah, I got it. I got one. I think it was Rebecca Cecil. She emailed me, said she couldn't make it, but Nancy had been.
Okay.
If anyone else did.
All right, good. Well, that leads us to number two, our featured program. Always exciting to take a deep dive and learn more about what different facets of extension are doing. And tonight we get to learn more about Foodwise highlights. So. Atifa, I assume that's going to be you tonight to begin this. All right, great. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to put my readers on because I can't see close up the panel. But just wanted to say thank you to the County Board of Supervisors and, you know, youth and governance when you come in. And then the colleagues team for the opportunity to present today about the Foodwise program. I hope this presentation today will provide community partners with some key information that will be beneficial to help champion our Foodwise program, because we're always looking for people to champion our program. Before I start my presentation, I'm going to ask you guys to participate. I would like to know how many, just by the raising your hand, how many people in this room are familiar with the Foodwise program? By raising your hand, how many people in this room can say they eat healthy foods every day? By raising your hand, how many people in this room have challenges accessing or buying healthy foods in your neighborhood?
In my neighborhood? What is my neighborhood?
Where you live, work, and play. Think of all those together.
Our closest grocery is 12 miles.
That's mine too, so like 11, 12 miles. So but I wouldn't consider that I have access. Yeah,
access to
that,
it,
right?
And it's in your neighborhood.
Exactly.
You don't have to walk backwards to get to it.
Right.
So thank you for participating. Now I want you to look to the board. How many servings of fruit, the board back there, should we have?
Well, I'm ready for a question. You get a blindfold?
A, 1 to 2 cups. B, 4 cups, C, 6 cups, or D, none of the answers above.
Ooh, and it's only fruits, not fruits and vegetables.
How do you determine, I mean, if you eat a banana or an apple,
Well, I'll give you a hint. I'm going
to
pass this down to you. This is our mind plate and how we determine how many fruits and vegetables a person should eat daily. So if you look at that, that might give you an idea of how we work with our participants within the community and our partners.
Just trying to give it up here.
I hadn't heard it described as cups, though. It's how many servings of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. is it an apple one cup? I mean, one piece of fruit one cup, roughly, or?
You pick one. When you have an apple, you cut it up. What would it look like if you cut it up? It depends. Some people might cut up two apples. That might come up in two. Like, let's say if this is a fist is one cup. Would one cup of fruits a day be okay? Two cups of fruits a day be okay? Four cups? So if you look at the my plate, half of it is fruits and vegetables. A small portion is grain, a small portion is protein, and a small portion is dairy.
Mm-hmm. So, if you want to know cups, I can tell you a quarter of your diet should be fruit. Right? So 4 to 6 cups, I'll cover on both of those.
And you know what? That would actually be equivalent if we did like fruits and vegetables together. But for fruits alone, they want you to have 1 to 2 cup. If you do vegetables, and Becky was right on, they do want them 1 to 3 cups of fruits and vegetables. And the purpose of doing this, and I want you to know, thank you guys for participating, because I want you to know, as the participants food-wise provide, that we provide nutrition education to, they might reside in a food desert, or they might not have access to healthy foods, and lastly, might not be able to afford to buy healthy foods. So I always want to start my presentation just with that learning piece, and just to get you in the mood of sometimes the participants we engage, okay? And so our mission is still the same. We haven't changed our mission. It's to advance healthy eating habits, active lifestyles, healthy community environments for low-income families through nutrition education at the individual, the community, and system level. And what does it mean to be low-income or limited income? That means several different things. And according to our eligibility and our criteria, anyone that's eligible for SNAP, like food share, the Quest card is another word that people say, WIC, Wisconsin W-2, Social Security disability, or free and reduced lunch. Another way how we, you know, that we've determined if people are eligible for our program is through organizations and schools where they're at least 50% of their enrollment or population are eligible for programs. And then FoodWise is an inclusive program, and we'll talk about that more. The other thing I want you to know is just meet our team. So currently I have 5 educators, I have 1 operation assistant, and then it's me. And our team is very diverse, a very culturally diverse team. We have 2 bilingual educators that do nutrition education in Espanol. Then we have Ness, she can do education in Albanian language. And then we have Alana, who identify as Native American, and we're working on some policy system and efforts around working with Native American tribes and bringing access to racing in Kenosha, those who identify. We believe that it's so important. We had a chance to do a focus group, and we did a focus group with African American families. Oh, it's the lead. Mr. Noodle.
Oh, let me. No, you are. Here, I'm just gonna move this. Need more space.
Sorry, I'm talking to the wrong camera.
It's okay. I'll let you get to. We were just talking about the diversity of our team and how it's important, so we can serve different people within our community. We currently do not have anybody from the Asian community. That where we can serve anybody from the Hmong community yet, but we're definitely looking to expand our team to make sure that we can serve everyone within our community. So what I was talking about, we got a chance to do focus groups, because one of the things that I learned about our program, and I just took over my program in November of 2021, that some of our educations just from our partners that we weren't culturally appropriate, and some of our recipes did not go across the board to work with all cultures. I brought that back to my regional program member manager and our state team, and just last week I got a chance to present at the state level of how we can improve nutrition education through our findings through our focus groups. So what is the FoodWise program? FoodWise program we're located within the Division of Extension, the Health and Well-Being Program, and FoodWise is a community-based nutrition education program that seeks to empower Wisconsin residents with limited income to make healthy choices, to achieve healthy lives and reduce health disparities. And the reason why I said that, we always want to give people the choice as opposed to determine choices for them. FoodWise is a program of the UW-Madison Division of Extension, and it operates in 71 of 72 Wisconsin counties. And I think a lot of people don't know that. The only county that we don't operate in is in Ozaukee County. How is FoodWise funded? I'll go to the next slide. FoodWise is federally funded by Supplemental Nutrition Assistant Program Education, also known as SNAP, and the Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program, also known as FNAP. SNAP Ed, like I talked about, is funding programs in 71 counties, and we are included. SNAP Ed teaches families and individuals the following: how to eat healthy, how to stretch your dollars, and how to stay active. FNAP, which is our expanded, we're located in six counties, and those six counties are Racine and Kenosha, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Rock, and Dane County. And that one, FNAP is very strict and structured. It's an evidence-based nutrition approach to work with youth and adults. And then our curriculum for that is Eating Smart and Being Active and Teen Cuisine. And we also just added on Around the Table, which is a trauma-informed care curriculum that helps with, you know, eating and, you know, how to eat healthy, but then also to address like family bonding and sitting around the table with your family. So why is it important? What is some important things to know about FoodWise? FoodWise program is in both in Racine County. Nutrition educators can teach programming virtually or in person, and this is something we learned during the pandemic, being able to teach programming virtually. Nutrition program can also be scheduled during the daytime and in the evening, and nutrition program can be taught in many different languages. And so we do have like access where if someone was hearing impaired, we would be able to serve them, but we would just have to reach out for, make sure that we have interpreters. And then the other thing that people always ask, nutrition education is free. It is not a charge for nutrition education. And so who do we serve? And that is a big thing. We provide direct education to early childhood education sites, like Head Start, youth within school systems, like Racine Unified School District or Kenosha Unified School District, or just after school programs, parents, seniors, and so we have, you know, one of our Strong Bodies program where they learn how to not only eat healthy, but they stay active with weights with our seniors and our senior sites, and pregnant moms, because we believe that just working with the hospital, one of our nutrition educators that you met, Ness, is actually at Ascension working with, you know, doing a direct education today with pregnant moms. We also work with foster care parents too, if their income does fit our eligibility. And then indirect education, we believe that reaching people through different ways. So we do our weekly recipes via email. If you are not on our weekly recipe list, I encourage you to get on there. There's some great and some tasty and healthy and delicious recipes that you might want to check out. And then through social media, we do understand that some of our participants or our partners like social media, so we try to adapt. So why is nutrition education important? Food insecurity may be long-term or temporary, but not eating healthy can contribute to the risk of developing some illness and other health problems, such as being overweight, tooth decay, and high blood pressure. People facing hunger often lack access to nutritious food and healthcare services, especially if they are older adults or if they live in rural areas. And then people facing hunger often choose between purchasing nutritious foods and paying for healthcare. So if you actually sit down with some of our participants, sometimes they will let you know, well, I don't buy healthy foods because it's way more expensive. Or if you look at the marketing strategies, if you ever walked into the store, if you know they put all the junk food up front and all the healthy food in the back, that's a great marketing strategy to encourage you to eat the junk food first as opposed to eat healthy. Okay? And then So I think it's critical to teach, empower, and support communities in many making healthy choices. The easy choice is where would people live, where they work and play. So I'm gonna have you watch a video so you can see the impact of the FoodWise program.
Struggling with my kids to feed them, trying to look for choices that they like. I have a really picky 6-year-old, which I struggle so much just to get them anything in, like veggies and fruits.
Everybody really wants what's best for themselves and for their family, right? Nobody wants to intentionally hurt their own body or intentionally hurt their family or make poor choices.
Money is a number one barrier for exercising, for eating healthy, because these are the families that don't have money to shop for organic foods or fruits or veggies or have a membership, because that's an extra bill that maybe that family can't afford.
Communities shape our health, and so if we don't have access to healthy food in our communities, that's definitely one thing that influences our health. And if the community has a mindset of being healthier and a safe place for people to play outside,
my first time going through the FoodWise program. It gives us an opportunity to learn something new and teaches my daughter healthier habits earlier on. We feel good about being armed with knowledge to share with our families to try to make better lives for them.
We offer educators that work at all different levels of development, from early childhood all the way up through seniors. We do senior programming. We offer so many different services, so many different opportunities for communities to come together.
The secret to the FoodWise success is that we are meeting people where they're at. We're working with parents and kids together, because that's what it looks like at home. At home, you're not cooking with your kids being watched by babysitter, you're cooking with your kids with you. So we're trying to recreate that environment in a place that's familiar. That's where the action happens.
We help to make healthy choice an easy choice for families by empowering individuals with the knowledge on how to make simple shifts in their choices in feeding their family. At a school level, we may be working with school wellness teams to implement different policies to help children be healthier, whether that's having more activity during their day or having more fresh fruits and vegetables during school lunches. And then at a community level, we work with community partners and coalitions to have that larger impact.
With our policy and systems and environment work, we're contributing to things like economic security, and we're increasing the availability of healthy foods. Ideally, we're increasing behavior change among the kiddos and the adults that we're doing nutrition education classes with. So in theory, they're becoming healthier. Their kids, they're becoming healthier adults because of the things that they learn in our direct education.
I think a lot of what makes FoodWise successful is how we work out in the community with our partners. We live in these places, we know these people, we work with these people, so it's really easy to meet them where they're at and try to coordinate with our community partners to make sure that people are actually getting access to the resources that they need.
This program has taught me that I can do a lot of things that I think I could do. So it has helped me to succeed. It helped me a whole lot, it's made me a whole lot more. I am never said I'm doing great with my legs. So whatever I'm doing, I need to continue.
I love hearing stories when people come back and say, hey, when I was in your class, I learned this. One time a mom came up to me and said, after you showed me how much sugar is in that soda, I don't buy soda at my house anymore. That's wonderful. That's great. Just think about the impact that that can make on the health of that family.
So I wanted to show you the impact video so you can see that the importance of health and nutrition and those wraparound of working with different individuals within our division of extension. And it's so critical because we can't do nutrition education by ourselves. And so we partner with other people within our division to help us advocate for others within our community. And so next, I'm gonna focus on our 2022 FoodWise highlights. This has been an amazing year for FoodWise. I know I've only been here a year, so, you know, but for us, In 2022, the Racing and Kenosha Food Wise Nutrition Educators provided direct education to 2,471 participants. And that's a lot coming out of the pandemic because they went from a place to where not being able to do a lot of education to now being able to go back into person. When I came back in, it ranged from working with kindergartens through 12th graders, early care and education facilities, emergency shelters, food pantries, as well as adult education or job training sites. The FoodWise program has reached 12,827 participants through indirect education. When I first started, we only had engaged maybe 500 people on our social media, and we were able to increase it to 6,000 or more on our Facebook by just putting out nutrition education and videos and working with partners. The program has engaged with 73 partners in 2022, such as WIC, Shalom Center, the Shearing Center, the local public libraries, Racine Unified School District and Kenosha Unified School District, and United Way of Racine and Kenosha, just to name a few. And then the Racine and Kenosha FoodWise team for the first time participated in National Nutrition Month in March of 2022. We were the first one in the state of Wisconsin to do National Nutrition Month under UW-Madison Extension, and then we were able to get proclamations in both counties, so I brought them for you just in case if you wanted to view them. And then one of our educators was highlighted on Spectrum News, and I do have that video for you if you would like to see it and have some idea what Rebecca Alonzo did. She was highlighted because she created a space for learning and provided nutrition support and resources to parents in Spanish and in English at Julian Thomas School located in Racine, Wisconsin. So they thought it was great to highlight her for all of the great work that she has done. And so I'll go ahead and show you that video as well.
Back to school time, and many parents are already busy packing lunches for their kiddos. This is a free class that happened in Kenosha County.
On you guys hearing that. Usually I use my hotspot. Right. Yeah. So.
Back to school time, and many parents are already busy packing lunches for their kiddos. This is a free class that I'm having now in Racine County, and these parents are learning how to pack healthy lunches for their kids that are not only nutritional, but also taste delicious. It's a Monday morning, and these moms are taking part in a free workshop series at Julian Thomas Elementary School in Racine. The nutrition series is put on by FoodWise, a UW-Madison Extension program that is a partner with the United Way of Racine County. It teaches families how to make tasty and healthy food and stretch their budget. Esmeralda Mejia is taking a class to better serve her son.
He is on the autism spectrum, so I'm always on the lookout for all healthy things, options in my home.
Other moms are taking the series to serve healthier back-to-school meals.
My help with that for school meal prepping, to get you more fruit and veggies.
These women, who are not only moms but also are bilingual, are learning a lot from the experience.
Today I learned that you don't have to defrost the meat outside. You're supposed to do it like put it in the bottom of the, how you say it?
The fridge.
I also didn't know how to use the thermometer.
I was not even receiving the proper amounts of veggies or fruits in a day. So hiding these fruits or integrating them into a proper dish has really improved our lifestyle. We didn't know anything about fibers. We are not even receiving the proper fiber, the proper calcium, the proper proteins. So now having that proper education and background, I can go to the grocery store and decide which products are actually helpful.
Rebecca Alonzo leads the Eating Smart Being Active class.
the participants get a chance to interact with some food carts, just to find fat, the protein, and that kind of information, the daily value, especially how much is needed.
She explains it's not only teaching us to cook healthy meals, but it's also creating a community.
We cook, we prepare some food, and we taste it all together, and we basically talk about stories. And
she speaks Spanish, so we have like this community that we all speak Spanish, so it
makes me comfortable.
A safe place where families in the Racine community are learning in English or Spanish how to buy, plan, and prepare healthy meals for their families as they kick off the school year. In Racine, Allison Bruner, Spectrum News.
So thank you for watching that video. I just, you know, because I just, Supervisor Carroll, I had them answer the question on the board and I had them participate to put them in the shoes of the participant. And so the
So how many of them got it right?
But Supervisor Becky was close. he was very, very close.
Just like horseshoes and hangers.
Ed got it because the rest of us were asking where potato chips were.
I was looking for the dip.
I was looking for the Brussels sprouts.
I was looking for you guys to serve some of them.
You know, I do like bringing samples, but I didn't know, like food allergies, and I'm very particular about that. So I just went on the safe side instead. So thank you. I mean, highlights, we have a lot, and I don't want to bore you, but one of the other last highlight I will talk about, after 2 years, we just relaunched our Foodwise Food Trips, and this is a collaboration with Racine Unified School District and the Racine County Food Bank. Member Amy Grail kind of talked about the importance of working with the food bank and the Kenosha Food Bank. So we worked closely, and we were able to educate at least 375 youth actually talking about food justice. And if you want to learn more about that project, we have an article in the Racine Journal Times. Talks about food justice, the importance of donating, advocating for health. So just a lot, and I, you know, just for sake of time, just in case other people want to do updates. And then we were able to donate 2 cherry trees to the Racine Food Bank Teaching Garden. We created a teaching garden. This project was started under Amy Masonman, and she's no longer with us. So then that project transferred to me to do the policy system and environmental efforts. And we completed every last task on that and have been asked to engage and do other more teaching gardens with youth coming up. And so what our next steps will be, we're gonna make sure that we continue to provide FNAP and SNAP Ed education to individuals, families, and partners within the Kenosha and Racine area. The nutrition educators will continue to engage partners and learn how to collaborate and create strategies around community resources. I was asked to be a part of the Hunger Task Force. So I've been joining those meetings because there are some PS efforts I want to work around the Badger Box and make sure we can put some healthy foods in there and some healthy resources in there as well. And so you'll just look for us more about food insecurity PSE efforts as we move towards the FY23 years. Any questions?
I didn't have dinner, so.
Well, I'm not going to get anything done.
Thanks for letting me think about food.
No problem. The only thing I always encourage partners with is always to just get to know your community before you make nutrition assessments about your community. You know, I really would like to see our community actually have like a listening session. As you know, food share and SNAP will be, you know, some of the food share will be reduced, and some they're talking about the Badger Box might go away, but it would really be nice if people could talk to our, you know, like you talk to your constituents or just talk to partners to see how it's going to affect our community as a whole when it comes down to health and nutrition.
Makes sense, Eva. I will pass the virtual gavel to Sheriff Carroll.
That's all right. The thing that I find interesting, and I guess it's, I don't know if I'd call it take it for granted, but, you know, I was born and raised with the garden and growing food and, you know, you know, eating right and healthy and all this stuff. So to me, it's like a second nature to me. I don't even really think about it because I know when you kind of instill it into your kids and stuff, but it's for me, it's hard to understand that people don't have that upbringing and have that ability to know what to do and how to do it, things like that. So.
And then I thank you for being honest and sharing that, because you do have that perspective where it, the same thing for me, where we had a garden, you know, and we learned. But just the people that we encounter, not everybody. There's doctors that I worked with. I presented over at Aurora Healthcare, and there's doctors that don't eat healthy, and they make $100,000 or $200,000 a year, have no idea. And, you know, they serve people every day how to eat healthy and how to stay physically active. So thank you for that, because it's just, you know, being mindful that everybody doesn't, you know.
It's really sad to see a person with a child or two walking with grocery bags away from a gas station or a Dollar Tree or someplace like that where the food is really more expensive than it is at a grocery store, and they probably are very limited in what money they have, but that's the only place they can get to.
Correct. And then that's a great statement too, because with our program, that's why we always ask you, do you have access in your neighborhood? So if you have a family dollar and that's all you have access to do, the educators do their best to help you come in there and read those labels and help you strategically come up with meals that save you money, but also keep you happy and healthy to reduce the sugar, fats, and salt too. And we just have, you know, have to be mindful, because some people only have a family dollar and open pantry, and we do our best to try to adapt.
Okay. Thank you. Looks like you have an agenda pulled up there. Dan, what's the next on the agenda?
Other program and educator updates. Yep.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. I didn't know if there's anything specific. And it looks like we have a new face here. So.
Sure, it's the same time for you.
So did I miss the introduction?
Okay. She withheld.
We did go around and say hello, but then I said details. I'll share more during.
Okay, all right. So did miss anything?
No.
So after the educator program updates, then Director Larson has her own section here to close out this portion of the meeting. So,
well, yeah. I think she probably has a lot to talk about.
Right. It's only day three, so I'll have a little bit.
I can get started with educator updates. So for Positive Youth Development, the Youth as Resources Board just had their fall granting session in November. So they provided funding for 6 community youth design, youth-led community service projects. And that was about $800 worth of funding at that point. So that was really exciting. And they're partnering with the ELCA Outreach Center for their Christmas party as their winter service project. So looking forward to that tomorrow night. Youth in Governance nominations will open up next week. So that's exciting. You know, to start asking for those nominations, and then once nominations are done, those will get sent out, and the application will have about a month to apply. And then for NEA, the NEA.
Yeah, and then for just a second. So when you say nominate, when you say it's going to go out, can you just explain the process?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep, so the Youth and Governance, the way that the process works is that first youth are nominated to the program. So youth can be nominated by teachers, counselors, any kind of mentor in the community. They can nominate themselves or each other if they hear about the program. So the first step of the process is reaching out to all of the school contacts in the county, and kind of for me making some you know, really like personal like phone calls to all the principals in different contacts to really get some names. And usually there are a few hundred youth that are nominated, and then they are all sent applications, and that kind of helps encourage them to apply and kind of know more about the program. And then usually about 50 to 100 apply out of that group that's nominated.
Okay, so it's basically, when you say nominations, well, it's your outreach. You send emails, you make some phone calls to people that you work with, and you cover all the schools throughout the entire county then, or yes. at a high school level?
Yep, so it's current sophomores and juniors.
Okay.
Yep, and definitely kind of board supervisors have nominated youth. Executive Kirkman has always nominated a few youth. She already called me a couple months ago to ask me to call some students and tell them about the program. So please, if you know any young people that want to apply, anybody and everybody can do so. So it's not just schools. They do outreach, obviously, through the homeschool network and through 4-H and through other community groups, Boys and Girls Club, just really any community organizations that I'm connected with, obviously through social media, through all the news outlets, really just letting youth know as much as possible and trying to get kind of a wide breadth of outreach, but also a lot of like, really, because sometimes I know a lot of teachers and counselors get so many emails as well, so also following up with those phone calls to counselors and to government teachers and people like that.
Okay, and then the proper way, do you, is there a website, county website, go to get
yep.
extension, or what, you know?
Yeah, I could definitely, you know, send
Are you
going
to send an email out to all the board members then?
Yes,
at some
yeah.
point? Okay, all right.
Yep, you'll get an email from me, and there's a paper form as well as an online nomination form where they'll just send in the student's name, school, contact information, things like that.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Carroll, Erica, since you're going through some of the background of the process, what are then the expectations for a YAIC? What are they expected to do in the program?
Yeah, so there are two, and we're actually going to go over the handbook in January and then move forward and kind of vote on any updates in a meeting after that. I think in February we'll make the final vote. But the youth, so there'll be, up till now, there's, at least this year, there were 16 youth that were chosen, two on each committee, and then the joint services, or on each, county committee, as well as the joint services committee, and they just are to attend every committee meeting, participate in discussion. They're required to attend at least 60% of the meetings, as well as at least one full 24 meeting to kind of participate, and the way that the interview process works, the highest scoring interviewee from each school in the county is selected first before the overall scores. So they are really, it's really kind of pressed upon them that they need to be talking to other youth in their school and make sure that they're really kind of bringing a representation of their peers as well to the board. So
60% plus one.
Yes.
60% of whatever committees they're appointed to.
Yes.
And I was asking because the observation is these kids are working hard to be at everything and putting
their
due diligence to do it. So
that's really all their initiative. They don't have to go to more than one full board meeting, and they don't need to go to any additional committee meetings, but a lot of them choose to do so because they're really very interested and get a lot out of the program and the opportunity to learn.
Now that helps. I wanted to make sure we weren't putting the burden on them. They're overachievers. They're great kids.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll go a lot more in depth on that in the January meeting and be kind of pulling together a subcommittee of this committee to choose the interview panel, which I don't have as much details on, which is something that I kind of messed up last year. So I'll be talking with Chairman Nuno and Carol about how to make sure we do that process completely by the books, because I was newer last year and COVID kind of messed things up. So we'll kind of go over that more in depth in January and bring about a subcommittee of this committee to select an interview panel, which will be the two youth and governance and then two of you to interview all of the finalists, which is usually about 25 students. Yeah, so I'm excited about that. I can't believe we're starting that process again already. But yeah, that's the time of year, you know. Yeah, so that's kind of my YIG update for now, but you'll definitely hear a lot about YIG for the next several meetings from me, so that's exciting. Yeah, and then other than that, just NEA, the after-school career and College Pathways program. We're having an event in January, January 19th, the library, bringing in some therapy dogs and doing some, like helping them kind of plan out their year. It'll be their last day of finals, at least with KUSD. So it'll be a really fun event with a lot of kind of relaxation things and help the youth kind of decompress and plan for their final semester. And then we are making plans for doing some in-school programming at likely Lincoln and Bradford as the pilot schools to talk to youth about career planning and things like that. So that's in the works, and hopefully getting that in-school programming component started by February. And then as the program grows, being able to expand to other schools in the county. I think that's all I got right now.
That's all.
Yeah, it's gonna be short. Chairman Carroll always comes with a question, and then I talk forever, and I'm long-winded anyway, so don't ask me. I'll talk forever, but I appreciate it. I appreciate all the questions a lot.
I met most of you last time. I'm just entering my third month in 4-H as the educator, so I had to bring a little cheat sheet of my highlights. It's kind of funny, it's just the third month, because doesn't it seem like I've been here like a really long time?
It does, but it's harder.
But it's been good. I think last month I was saying we were working on the annual financial reports and charters. Thankfully, those are all finished and behind us until next October, probably. The highlights of my month have probably been club visits and project visits. I try to get to as many of those as I can to be a good resource and develop those relationships with those we're reaching. If I am not able to get to their project, I have invited them to my office. We sit down and I just try to learn, you know, as much as I can about what they're doing and how I can support them. So that's been really nice and rewarding. I've also gotten back involved with the Quad County project, and that's Waukesha, Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha, and we've been meeting over Zoom and things to see how we can work together and pool our resources to do some activities. We went and toured the Fab Lab, which is Gateway. It's in Sturtevant, Racine there. So the four of us went there and looked at that as a resource. We've also planned a joint trip to Madison for a science day in April, so that's a little bit ahead yet. I've started planning camps, so we've gone to a little bit of that. And then my next big business thing that I'm tackling will be bylaws with the clubs and projects. So we need to review those. Some of them are pretty old. Again, I don't, you know, fault anyone for that. It's been, you know, a lot to gather together. So that's the next thing I'll be working on business-wise.
Thank you, Carolyn. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've met you, so how are you
doing?
Go ahead, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
We only have
a few minutes left here, so I'm going to give Mary your turn.
A couple highlights for my programming is work I've been doing with the Kenosha Correctional Center. One aspect is helping to coordinate reentry resource needs. So this is for the guys that are right on the cusp of being released. Typically, folks that are at Kenosha Correctional Center end up going back to Milwaukee, Racine, or Kenosha. So through that, it's getting a sense of what type of community resources, needs, programs would be beneficial, and then just making sure that they have that information in hand at the point that they are being released back into the community. Another thing that I do with Kenosha Correctional Center is financial education. So the way it's structured is usually when the men are first arriving to the facility, this is before they've gone through job training or placement. But that is a big focus of the facility. And then at the point that they are still in custody but working, the state controls the majority of the earnings that they have. But at the point that they're released, that money is released to them. So the idea that the superintendent had was to give them some more practical, general, usually pretty basic money management, budgeting, credit information, so that they have that going into the forthcoming job and then looking ahead toward when they are released with, and it can be a pretty big chunk of money depending on the span of time from when they start working to the point that they're released from the facility. And then another thing that I've been preparing for right after the holidays is a stress management and mindfulness series that I'll be doing with a day program that serves adults with developmental disabilities. So with this, as Atifa had said before, with different accommodations that we're able to access through UW, similarly, we have a access to someone who is there to make sure that whether it is a learning need or a physical need or language needs, that we're able to make those accommodations. So for this, it's going through the series and just making sure that it's appropriate for people with different literacy needs or comprehension needs or, you know, kind of the whole scope of audience that they have within the day program. So it's a little bit of retooling what's there, but then it makes it a lot more of a fruitful experience for the participants. So, any questions?
Yeah, just one.
Sure.
In the last year, this past year, you had a the first aid.
Yes, the mental health first aid.
Mental health first aid, yes.
Yep.
Are you planning any for this next year?
Yes, so UW Parkside, I've been emailing with them. They're interested in doing two, one right away in January while they're kind of on break, and then one later in later winter, early spring. And this is specifically with the athletics department. So this would be coaches, trainers, I'm sure there's other staff that work with their athletics department, but they sought out the training, so we'll be going out to Parkside to do that, myself and a co-facilitator, when I say we. And then another is the free virtual trainings that we've been able to offer statewide. Those within the statewide team in Extension that I work with, we're able to strategically offer them different days, different times, and since it's virtual, are able to join from all over the state and it's free. So that is something where the schedule will be released soon, and then that is continuing through the grant funding that Extension obtained but we're able to use in the communities. There is going to be a specific emphasis on rural communities. So again, for those of you that are living or working or have connections in end of our county, if you have folks that you know or churches or organizations, other places that could be a good landing spot to hold one, definitely let me know too.
Great. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, thanks.
And I have one more educator report on behalf of VJ Panion. VJ had been out of the country for a few weeks on FMLA attending to an ill family member, so he just came back yesterday. So I do have, he did want me to share with you though, this information about his 2023 landscape and grounds maintenance short course that will be online and registration opened today. It'll be Wednesdays in February from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. and there's a description for the program here, so there's a copy for you there. Okay, great, thanks. For educator reports. So it's on to me, the anticipation. This is only day three, so it's like, how much to share? So for those of you, what's that?
10 minutes.
Oh, not going to take that. I'll tell you that already. So Pam Larson, I'm the new Area 22 director, so Kenosha and Racine County. I come to you with 4 years of experience in Extension. So I feel like I'm already ahead of the learning curve because I am familiar with Extension. I was, what Erica does here, that is what I was doing in Racine County. So I've had the pleasure of working with their board and getting to know their supervisors, and so I just embrace the opportunity to work with all of you, so really looking forward to that, and with the various department heads as well. So I'm happy that I do have that advantage of knowing Area 22, knowing the living within the area, meaning close by, and that sort of thing. Before that, I was in education, so I held administrative positions at the elementary, the middle school, the high school, and the district level. So therefore, I come also with a lot of professional development background, budget background, as far as building relationships, all of that. So just a lot of community building background as well, outreach, all of that. So I have spent the first 3 days really getting to know Kenosha and processes and that kind of thing. So people have been very warm and welcoming and very helpful. So I appreciate that very, very much. And that's really going to be my focus as I start off. So at times you may see me at other committee meetings, for instance, but as I just familiarize myself with Kenosha County. I know you have a great team of educators here. We have a great team of educators. I've had the privilege of working with, like, Mary for 4 years, but for, working with them. And I'm just happy that I get to collaborate even more and work with them even more than I used to. So I'm happy about that, too. So I don't know if you have any questions for me as we begin.
I have one.
Sure. Let's hear it. I like it.
So Pam.
Yes.
And I'm, like you're relatively new. There's
yes.
A couple of us, I've mm-hmm. been on the board here since April, so I still consider myself relatively new.
Sure.
So where do you, where's your office? Where do you spend mm-hmm. time? Is it here at the other end of the building? You have the time here, half the time we're seeing? Is it splitting the, is it full time here? Just give me an idea of how you see your time being spent in the next couple months. Mm-hmm.
Splitting my time between the two offices. And I could see, especially at first, I'll spend a little more time here because I'm learning about the county and the program and meeting people and that sort of thing. So initially here, but I can see some splitting as well, definitely. Because I want to have a presence in both counties.
Okay. And where do you call home? Is it in
like personal home? Like
yeah, like Racine here, Kenosha area.
Oh, I live in Genoa City, so right outside of Lake Geneva. Yep.
So while we're in the rural area of the year.
I'm in a rural area, exactly. And I traveled to Lake Geneva to do my grocery shopping, which was the people who are here know what that was about, how far do you have to go.
So I'm
yeah.
Twin Lakes.
Oh yep, you're right there, a neighbor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, we always would play you in sports as far as at the middle school level. Yes. Brookwood Middle School always played you. Yes.
Oh, very good.
And I spent a lot of time, especially when my son was younger, in Kenosha for sporting events because his dad lives in Kenosha. He lived in Kenosha, now he lives in Salem. So he did we were at the Rockplex all the time. We did Y programs. So we spend a lot of time in Kenosha. So.
Okay.
And enjoying everything here.
Welcome aboard.
Thank
Anybody
you.
Else have any questions? All right, I guess they leave them all for me.
Right? Oh. Good to know. So, I didn't make note.
Well, I guess all that I can say to finish up this part of the meeting is Merry Christmas to everybody. Because it's here before you know it.
Yes, it will be.
Man, I don't know where this year went, Just like you said, it's like, holy cow. I can't believe a year's gone by or
Correct.
As much time has. So, and same thing with you, Erica.
Yep.
So, but anyway, sounds good. We'll meet over in the other room in about 6 minutes.
And break for you.
Get on to the next part of the meeting.
Motion's original.
Thank you.
So Pamela, you get to take the notes of meeting then?
I did. I recorded and I wrote down some extras as well.